Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Well, even a lazy perusal of Google will give you an indication of the back and forth in the last few months between North Korea and the U.S. on issues of nuclear development, also issues of provocation. There was the ship that was sunk in South Korea that led all the way to a U.N. condemnation of North Korea. But the question is, what is it like inside the regime of Kim Il-sung? What is it like to actually be in Pyongyang? What is it like, and how is all of this news digested by the people of North Korea? It's difficult to get such a glimpse inside. Very few journalists do, but the very patient Barbara Demick, author of the award-winning book Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea, joins us. She had an extraordinary piece in The New Yorker a few weeks back, which really pieces together an image of what it's like inside North Korea from the voices of people who've managed to come out very, very recently. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I want to just talk to you about the various stories that you have been told. First of all, let's just get a setting of the scene here. Much of your article in The New Yorker was set in this town in Manchuria, which has become a kind of informal destination for people who are fed up with what's going on in North Korea and just find their way inside China. Explain this city that you've found.
That's right. The city is called Yeonji, and it's the capital of the Korean, the ethnic Korean region in China. The population of the city is about 30% Korean, and it's very convenient for North Koreans who sneak across the border to infiltrate this town and to hide among the local population because it's, of course, they're illegal migrants, and they'll be hunted down and sent back. But nevertheless, there are always thousands of North Koreans around the city of Yeonji. So journalists and aid workers and, I suppose, spies, of which I'm not one, often go into Yeonji. And it's very interesting because you can meet a North Korean who left last week. And as you probably know, when a journalist or anybody goes to North Korea, you cannot possibly
right.
have a normal conversation with anybody. So we work a lot with these migrants or border crossers.
Well, tell me the story of Song Hee, a 17-year-old girl who takes this risk. I mean, we think of China as being an ally of North Korea, so why would there be such a risk of going to the ally of China? But in fact, as you've said, there's plenty of risk. And why did this 17-year-old girl take her life and these matters into her own hands to leave this country on her own?
Well, Song Hee is really emblematic of the younger generation of North Koreans, especially the people living near the Chinese border, who are savvy enough to know that their country has no future, at least not for them. And Song Hee grew up in a town called Musan, which really hugs the Chinese border. And these North Koreans grew up with the slogan, "We have nothing to envy in the world." That's where the title of my book comes, and that's what they believed. They thought, okay, life is tough in North Korea, but people are starving in China, which actually they were at a point, and our life is much better. But slowly they've become aware that the Chinese live a much better life, that the Chinese eat rice three times a day, that the Chinese eat things like bananas and eggs, and that they're living in what's functionally a prison. So they have started to sneak across the Tumen River. The whole border between North Korea and China goes about 800 miles, and it's two rivers, the Yalu and the Tumen.
Right,
but
right.
The Tumen, which is in the north, is as narrow as 30 yards across. So this girl grew up, you know, going to the river with her friends sometimes, looking on the other side, thinking, if only. And she had a friend who was coming across, so she thought she would take a chance at freedom.
And they walked across the frozen river and made it into China and encountered you. And I guess, you know, you describe this sort of savvy of knowing that there is something else outside, but that savvy doesn't include, for instance, knowing what the internet is. Song Hee had no idea what that was. You know, give me a sense of what it's like to dream of bananas and then have one.
it's a revelation. And I think with each bite of that banana, what you're realizing, you're not just tasting the banana, but you're realizing how much you lost and how deprived you were. Again, you know, they thought they had it good. In fact, the first thing that Song Hee said to me was, I was very lucky, I was very rich in North Korea. And what she meant by rich was that she would get an egg every so often, maybe once or twice a month, that she had tasted banana. To her, that was rich. And then she comes out to this town, Nyingi, which, you know, I don't think it's much of a place. I think it's kind of a dump. But she comes out and she thinks she's in heaven. So the banana, again, is you know, telling her what she's been missing. And she was only dreaming of what riches might lay outside of this little town in China. These people are so cut off and deprived.
Barbara, you're talking about the border with China. I was at the DMZ, that other border with South Korea. And what struck me and strikes anybody who goes there is you are in a total time warp. It's a total frozen zone. It's the strangest arrangement with the soldiers at their weird, rigid attention that they stand the whole time. What is the sense of the North Koreans towards that border and the South Koreans right now?
Well, the North Koreans see the South Koreans not exactly as the enemy, but kind of the wayward brother. They always talk of each other as brothers. And South Korea is the missing southern half that is under the thumb of the U.S. imperialists and gone wrong. And North Korean propaganda still has it that, you know, they will someday be reunited and North Korea will rule all of the Korean Peninsula. I don't think anybody believes that, or not too many people believe it. But it's not exactly enemies. It's more like, well, more like the relative gone bad.
Do they still, by the way, have that relative exchange? Are there still people finding each other and going across that border?
No, it's everything has been frozen for about 2 years. Mm. There had been a very lively inter-Korean cultural exchange and relatives exchange and business exchange through 2000 when Kim Jong-il and Kim Dae-jung, the two presidents of the respective Koreas, had a summit in Pyongyang. But everything has gone downhill the last few years, culminating with the apparent torpedo attack on the South Korean ship. So relations are very much frozen right now.
And these glimpses are really all we get. I mean, there was a glimpse of what went on in North Korea when they hired those actors from China to sit at the World Cup when they got defeated by Portugal. So much to think about. You know, Barbara, I could talk to you for an hour, but we have to go. Barbara Demick, author of the award-winning book, Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea, which will be available in paperback next month. You can see her article in the archives of The New Yorker. Barbara, thanks so much.
Thank you.